Imagine you're a teacher, administrator, or a parent, someone on the front lines of education today. You're working hard to ensure students learn, but policies from Washington just keep changing the game. The U.S. Department of Education, a powerful federal agency, sets the rules, controls the money, and defines what success looks like in schools nationwide. But is it actually helping or creating more problems than solutions? Stay tuned for today's show as we dive into these wild issues facing U.S. education today on the Traveling Principal Show. Okay, guys, so since its establishment in 1979, the Department of Education has shaped the way schools function in America. I have been working in these schools since 1998, all over the U.S., and so today's show is going to be dedicated to trying to figure out how to shed some light on what's going on here. We are not going to take a political position, but I am going to give you all of the information and present to you both sides so you can start to make educational decisions about this topic on your own. And so let's get right into it. The U.S. Department of Education enforces civil rights laws. It distributes billions in funding. And then it sets national policies. But as schools face more and more new challenges than ever, teacher shortages, funding gaps, learning loss, many are asking, does the DOE need a major overhaul? Let's dive in and take a look. So I don't want to go too in-depth on a lot of this stuff. Today, I want to just present to you the facts. As the time goes here, I'm sure we're going to revisit this topic. I am looking for experts, so anybody willing to come on, everybody that I've been emailing and asking, they're all too kind of hesitant to talk about a topic like this. But now is the time to talk about it instead of hiding. So let's see if we can get some experts. Here's a challenge to all of you out there. So what does the Department of Education control? Let's look at five major areas that the Department of Education is at the helm of and really make a lot of decisions for education today. So the first one is funding. Title I, Title II, Title III, Title IV. Title I specifically for low-incoming schools, most popular, IDEA for special education. Pell Grants for students. major funding, major. When I'm saying major, I have been at two schools out of the last six, and if they did not have Title I or if they did not have federal grants, they were not operable. Simple as that. So one of the things that we're going to talk about is if they do get rid of it, I don't think that the money just goes away. I think the money rolls down to the state. So maybe we can sleep a little bit easier thinking of that notion. But again, I'm asking for some experts to come in and shed some light on that. But the second thing is they control policy and standards. Being on the opposite end of this, I'm dealing with standardized testing, accountability measures, Common Core, right? When they changed all the standards to the Common Core standards, and then even curriculum guidance, right? So there's all these state-run or national curriculum movements. And so that trickles down into the states, that trickles down into districts, and then into schools eventually, and we're dealing with a policy or a standard that has been developed months ago by people who are usually not in schools but study them. So I've always had a hard time dealing with the standardized testing, accountability measures, and some curriculum guidance. Common Core, however, if you've listened to the show, you know what my feelings are on that, and I do believe in Common Core because of how it was created. So once you start to dive into that, it's really easy to see the same. Another thing the U.S. Department of Education controls is civil rights and enforcement. Being on the administrative side of Title IX, racial equity initiatives, school discipline policies, this is some wild stuff. If this goes away, I'm not too sure what's going to happen in education, in schools. I'm not too sure what's going to happen in schools. That one is just as scary as funding. But let's keep going, right? So we have funding, we have policy and standards, and we have civil rights enforcements. The fourth one, higher education oversight. I'm just going to briefly mull over this one fast. Student loan programs, for-profit college regulations and accreditation. In that whole world, I don't live. I did pay my loans. It did take a long time. It slammed my credit because we had no idea what we were doing back in the day, and no one took it away. I had to pay it back. I had to build it back up. I had to work my way from where I was to where I am now. So that said, I have my own opinions on higher education oversight. And the fifth one is research and data collection. Collecting school performance data to drive policy decisions. I do think that this is necessary. Research and data collection is absolutely something that it's R&D, right? If you're not doing research and development, what are you doing? You're stasis, right? You're not growing, you're not moving, you're not changing with times that are absolutely dictating that need. Where things get messy. So with each one, let's take a look and categorize it in the same here. Because when we're talking about the first one, federal overreach or local control, you know, with regards to things like funding, do the Washington bureaucrats know better than local educators? 1,000%, they do not. No way. You're not going to tell me, any Washington bureaucrat is going to tell me something that I haven't already been talking about for 25 years in education. Should I be making these decisions? No, but I certainly know that there are other people who are much more qualified, and it is not them. But for some reason, we give them the control. So there's a huge concern right there within the conflict of the U.S. Department of Education. Funding disparities, right? And this is, I think, the one that is really going to be the most impacted. So billions of dollars are spent, yet underprivileged schools still struggle. And being in New York City public schools for about 14 years, that entire time, I saw what struggle looked like. I saw what inequity looked like. I did see when districts maybe 10 miles away, now you have to realize 10 miles in New York City is a long way, but 10 miles away, there are districts that are spending so much more per kid annually, and yet here are these schools 10 miles the opposite direction with 10 times the amount of schools, students in each building, and that much less to work with. And I felt like our taxes were the same. You know, we're New York City, we're in the boroughs, but yet there was always that disparity, and I wasn't too certain where that came from. I'm assuming it starts at the top, right? So I don't have a lot of negative things to say about what would happen if someone else was able to control that, but who is that person or entity, and what are they going to do when they get there, I guess is going to be the questions that we're really trying to focus on. But the third thing is with testing and accountability battles, you know, the DOE's focus on standardized testing hurts students more than it helps. I have to say that, being on the receiving side of it. It's probably because of, you know, we issue these tests and then we just take the scores and we use them in this product way, right? And I've talked a lot about on the show about what I love to call process versus product. And when you're doing standardized testing, you are creating a product, you are creating a benchmark, you are creating an actual result. But what you do with that result is called education. It's called growth. It's why we're all here. And when we don't do anything with it but report it and then yell at it and brag about it and throw it in everybody's faces, that is counterproductive. And that's what the state usually does with these test results. They give us these tests that were mandated to issue because of large conglomerates within education that are privatizing testing, et cetera, which is only going to get way worse when all of this happens. But we're dealing with these results. They splash them all over websites. Other websites try to make themselves reputable by saying, look at what these schools are doing, just by skimming all the data off of the state and spreading this information even further about schools that really just is not beneficial to staff, to students, to administration, to anybody, and then eventually parents who are just angry at what they see, and you can't blame them for that. The next one, Title IX controversies. So I've, as a principal and as an assistant principal, I was involved in Title IX investigations on the investigating end a number of times. Oh my gosh. Regulations on gender identity, discrimination, and discipline impact. This is what Title IX deals with. There are mass amounts of lawyers. There are mass amounts of people working within Title IX. And because I've had to use it, and I do feel like Title IX has serviced well for what we needed it for, to really lay the law down and be able to help us enforce it when it was needed most. You know, I don't know what to say if that all goes away. What's going to happen? Let me ask you that. What happens now when those investigations come to my table? They come to the office. You know, we usually go right to these regulations, and without them, I'm wondering what do we do then? And then, of course, this last one, which is really messy, is the student loan crisis. Right, the DOE controls billions in student loans, but is it fixing or worsening the debt problem? I guess is worsening the debt problem. Sorry. I guess that's really what the question is. And so I have no answer for that one either. But these are the five major areas: funding, policy and standards, civil right enforcement, higher education oversight, and then, of course, research and data collection. And so doing away with all of those, I'm hopeful that we'll have at least a substitute in place with some sub-lesson plans to hold us over. All kidding aside, what are the major debate questions here? Should the DOE be restructured, decentralized, or even done away with completely? I'm going to lean into the restructured or maybe decentralized. I do want to say, as somebody who has worked in large schools of 5,000 kids and somebody who's worked in very small schools with 180 kids, there is a unique difference between your ability to be impactful with that many students and really get somewhere with regards to what we're all trying to do here, which is create better people in this world. And when it's too big, that's a challenge. And I'm wondering if that's what the Department of Education is sort of faced with here. So big questions as well. What would it look like if the state had complete control? Right, greater flexibility, perhaps. States would have the ability to tailor education policy specific to the needs of the populations without these federal mandates, with standardized requirements, could be. How about with funding? Without federal oversight, states could determine their own funding allocations, which could lead to greater innovation, but also deeper inequities between wealth and low-income regions. I mean, that is bound to happen. It's happened already with what's going on. So taking away what's trying to prevent that from being worse is counterproductive. Curriculum differences. So states could design their own curriculum, allowing for culturally relevant education and experimentation with different instructional methods. However, this could also mean that there's a lack of consistency in what's being taught. And that's already happening, right? On a bit of a scale, this is already starting to take place, and without any sort of accountability or oversight on a larger scale, this is going to get way worse. And so your textbooks, state to state, will be greatly different in its content, and that is a little troublesome. At some point in time, we're going to have to know where we started and what's real, and I'm a little nervous about that. Policy experimentation is the last great area of concern here, and states would serve as laboratories for education reform, testing new models without national constraints. And I am a fan of that, but the downside could be the potential for increased educational disparities across the country, and that will absolutely happen. In a state like California, which could stand alone as a country and already has systems in place, et cetera, I think we're going to be okay. In some smaller states that are already struggling, and I have an episode coming out about the state-to-state rankings in the U.S. from 2024. Those that are in the bottom few are really going to struggle in a way that I think is going to impact that state tremendously. I spend all my time on this podcast talking about the importance of education and what it means to the community that the schools are in and the societies that we live in today. And if you take away one of the only ways we can better ourselves, what are you doing? If you're taking away that strength, if you're taking away that structure, there is a 6% growth in U.S. families that are homeschooling their students in accordance to educationnext.org. And that's huge. That's a big number. Parents are citing concerns about standardized curriculum, school environments, and the desire for more personalized learning approaches as key factors driving this shift, in addition to their belief systems. And you cannot leave that fact out without it actually impacting in an immense way the decision that parents are making. And I don't want to leave that fact out. I do call it as it is on the show. And we can say that we have concerns about standardized curricula, school environments, and the desire for a more personalized learning approach. But we also have religion, and that is gigantic in this country. It decides quite a bit. So I don't want to leave that out as well. And I would also think, you know, at a time right now, just to kind of throw this at you and really, really make it worse, what kind of confidence in our traditional public education system do we currently have? If we're being led to believe that what's currently in place is not sufficient, and we have our reasons, you know, no two ways about it. At the end of the day, somebody needs to say, well, okay, doing away with it might not be the best idea. Fixing it. Fix a problem. I like those solutions. Fix it. However, right? Maybe I can help. So let's wrap it up here because this is a very controversial episode. But the U.S. Department of Education does wield enormous power over our schools. And that power may or may not be used very wisely. And we have statistics to prove both sides of this situation. But as we've seen today, there are real outcomes and real concerns currently in place about federal overreach, about accountability and the funding gaps for sure. And it's time for a serious conversation about the future of education in America. There's no two ways about it. What do you think we should do here, you guys? Should the DOE have more control? Should they have less control? Or should we rethink its role entirely and do away with it? Reach out to me on social media or leave a comment. I'd love to hear your thoughts. Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Traveling Principal Show. Stay tuned, stay curious, stay informed, especially. And let's keep pushing for a better education system, whatever that system may be.